Well, I need to tell you that I'm a Christian because of Jesus. And that probably doesn't come as any surprise to you, or I hope it doesn't, that I'm a Christian because of Jesus. But what I mean is, I've been a Christian a reasonably long time now, not as long as some of you, but a reasonably long time. And the more I've thought about my faith and more I've thought about what it means to be a Christian and how do I believe this? How do I know this to be true in a world which would really ridicule my faith? How can I know that it's true? Why am I a Christian? And I tell you that I'm a Christian because of Jesus. All right, the Christian faith starts with Jesus. The Christian faith does not start with the children of Israel. Does not start with Adam and Eve. I know in our Bible that's the linear progression of the story that we read. But I'm a Christian because of Jesus. All right, so the eternal one. And when he comes to earth and when he ministers and when he was born and he lives and he's died and he's risen and he's exalted, he changes everything. And he changes the history before him. So sometimes people, you can think that our Christian faith is like an offshoot of Judaism, right? So you think, well, it all started with the Jews and there was one offshoot which was Christianity and a later offshoot which was Islam. But that's wrong. The beginning of our faith is Jesus. It's not chronological. It's eternal, you see. The beginning of our faith is Jesus. And so when I look at the stories of Jesus, they mean a great deal to me. And I try and understand, like you do, his character. And I try and understand him. And I think, what would it have been like to be with Jesus? And I wonder how I would have gone as one of those disciples. I'm not sure that I would have appreciated walking everywhere. I'm not a fan of walking. If I don't have to walk, I won't. I'm not sure that I would have understood everything about him. I don't know that if I was one of those disciples, I would have got all the doctrine straight away. I don't know if I would have been able to say, yes, he's truly and properly God and truly and properly man. All right, the doctrine we ended up with. But I think they saw something in Jesus. They saw something extraordinary, just like you and I do. Yet in some ways, to me, Jesus is also incomprehensible. Jesus, to me, is also unfathomable. I can't actually understand the truly and properly God and truly and properly man bit. One Victorian writer said, "The infinity of God is not mysterious. It is only unfathomable, not concealed, but incomprehensible. It is a clear infinity, the darkness of the pure, unsearchable sea." It is not concealed. It is not hidden. Jesus is not hidden, but incomprehensible. And I hope it's okay to say that. But Luke's gospel, which we've read from today, is the one that gives me the very best understanding of Jesus, I think. And I respond to the Jesus in Luke's gospel. Now, I think Luke is a skilled storyteller. And I think from him we get an understanding of what it was like to hang out with Jesus. And the things that they saw and the things that they heard. And it's really interesting to trace the disciples' journey to Jerusalem. I don't know if you noticed on the way through our reading today, but they were just having a good time, weren't they? And they were just rejoicing and they were singing because of all the miracles they had seen. That's what it says. Because of all the miracles they had seen. Because of what they had seen when they were with Jesus. And I think they kind of got him, incomprehensible as he was. They kind of got him. They kind of believed. And in fact, this journey to Jerusalem has started a few chapters before. So in chapter 17, in verse 11, Luke tells us that they're on their way to Jerusalem. Chapter 18, verse 31, Jesus says, "We're going up to Jerusalem." And this is a bit they don't understand, right? He says, he's kind of trying to say to them, it's not going to be good for you. In one way, because all that's written about the Son of Man will be accomplished. And then along the way, Jesus encounters a blind man. And a blind man calls out to him and says, "Jesus, son of David." And Jesus says to him, "What do you want?" And the man says, "Have mercy on me. Have mercy on me." And Jesus does. And that's followed by another story, a story of Zacchaeus, another one who saw Jesus, who did all he could to see Jesus. Famous story that we learn in Sunday school. Climbs up the tree so he can see Jesus. And he recognized Jesus as someone extraordinary. Did he understand all that Jesus was? Truly and properly God, truly and properly man? I don't think he did. But he saw something in Jesus that meant that he had to know him and invited him to his house. And Jesus said to him at the end of that encounter, "Salvation has come to your house because the Son of Man came to save the lost." Then in chapter 19, we actually draw near to Jerusalem. All right, they're on their way up. Now, I've never been to the Holy Land, but apparently Jerusalem is high on top of a hill, and as you climb up from the Jordan Valley and from Jericho in particular, which is, I think, below sea level, as you climb up, you can see Jerusalem. You can see it on top of the hill. And so they began their climb up to Jerusalem. And on the way, Jesus tells a very strange story, a very strange story. But it's one that I think we need to pay attention to, because remember, Luke is a skilled storyteller. He tells us a story about an unwanted king. Tells a parable about an unwanted king. And this king goes off to somewhere else to get himself declared as king. And a group of people follow him to say, "No, we don't want him as king." And before he leaves, this particular king leaves his servants some money. And he says, "I want you to look after this." And eventually he returns and he's been proclaimed as king. And he encounters each of these people and he says, "What have you done with the money? One's done really well, one's done not so well, one's hardly done anything at all." That's a very similar story to the one of the talents, right? But then the king, not Jesus, the king says, "And those people who didn't want me as king, kill them." And it's a strange story, this story of the unwanted king. Now, who's it for? Who's it for? And really, this is for Jerusalem. This is for the children of God who have seen their king and rejected their king. That unlike Zacchaeus, unlike the blind man, unlike the disciples, they haven't recognized Jesus. So it's a brutal ending of punishment for those who are hostile to the king. It's a story of bitter consequences for those who reject their rightful king. And I wonder, if I was a disciple, what I would have made of that story. What was Jesus talking about? Did they comprehend who he was? Did they know who they were following? Because I suspect that they didn't really get it. They didn't really get it. At some level, sure. But we'll see as we tell the whole Easter story over this next week that they just didn't understand. All right? It was, they could see Jesus. He wasn't concealed, but he was incomprehensible to them. And sometimes they didn't believe him. He actually told them, "It's going to be all right. It's going to be bad, but it's going to be all right." And they didn't believe him. I suspect not because they didn't want to, but because it seemed too good to be true that it was going to end up all right. But here's the other thing I love about the disciples. They were obedient. And so in our story, as Jesus comes into Bethany, he tells two of them to go and get the donkey. "Two of you, off you go. Get the donkey." And there's great value in obedience, I think, even when we don't understand. I remember when, before we had children, you make up your mind about what sort of parent you're going to be, and I decided I'd be the funny one. And it's going great. And I also decided that I'd never say to my children, "Because I told you so." See, when I was a kid growing up, I'd get these instructions and orders, and I'd say, "Mum, why do I have to do that?" "Because I told you so." Mum, but why can't I? No, just do it. Just do it because I told you so. And I was determined that I would never be a parent that said, because I told you so. And that lasted, I guess, maybe into our oldest child's second year. In fact, I was saying it before she could really understand, stop crying, because I told you so. But there's great value in obedience. There's great value in obedience, unthinking obedience. These disciples who followed, didn't really understand, but followed nonetheless, listened to their Lord. Jesus said, go and get the donkey, and they did. I remember when we used to have these family trips when I was younger, so in my late teens, and I've got a younger sister who's a lot younger than me. So I was probably 17 or 18, and my little sister was 2 or 3. I remember we'd pulled into a service station, and Dad used to be a truck driver, so he always drove on a schedule. So, you know, we always had to just keep to the program. And so this was a stop where we weren't getting out of the car. We were just refueling and that's it, all right? We're going on our way. Anyway, my little sister needed to go to the toilet. So Mum was a bit more casual about this whole thing, let her open the door. And so a busy service station on the New England highway, she hopped out of the car and started to run across in vehicles. Well, Dad saw her and he said, I can't say how loud he said it, but everybody in the service station heard it. He said, Meredith. And she stopped. Froze, in fact. Instant obedience. There are times when obedience can make a difference. And they were obedient, these disciples. I do like them. They loved him, you see. They loved Jesus. Like I love Jesus. And I've never met him. Imagine if you'd met Jesus. Imagine if you'd met him in the flesh. They thought he was extraordinary. They put him on the donkey. They put him on the donkey. They spread their cloaks on the road. And perhaps it was lighthearted, perhaps it was fun, but it was very real too. And they were caught up in this moment as they proclaimed Jesus as king. Did they think through all that it meant? Probably not. Did they see it the same way as the Pharisees who were there? Certainly not. The Pharisees saw trouble coming. And they said to Jesus, you need to stop. You need to stop what they're saying. But these disciples, the more they'd hung out with Jesus, the more they knew about him. You see, they journeyed with Jesus, and a journey with Jesus changes us. When we travel the road with Jesus in the dust of the rabbi, it changes us. And so I'm kind of proud of the disciples at this point, as they participate in this eternal story that changes everything. And they put Jesus on the donkey and they put their cloaks on the road and they start yelling, he's the king, and they start singing. And I think this is kind of a youth council's moment, right? You know, do you remember youth councils? Youth councils is a thing where, you know, all the young people from, it's not called youth councils anymore. What's it called? Is it still called youth councils? Youth councils and Pulse. So there's still youth councils, all right? Phew. And when you go to youth councils, it's fantastic and the music's great and the sets look like this, because in fact the same team that does ours does youth councils. And they look fantastic and everybody's caught up in the moment, you're singing and you're dancing, it's fantastic. And I think this was a youth council's moment for them. It's very different when I went to youth councils, right? I meant the brass band who was at youth councils would play a funky number. Daniel or something. But this was a youth council's moment for these guys. And they were caught up in the excitement of this. Perhaps someone else had started. Someone had started the singing. They just joined in. And someone had started putting the cloaks on the road. And they just joined in. It wasn't a plan, right? It was spontaneous. It was a spontaneous moment. And I wonder, too, if Jesus let them have this moment. I wonder, too, if Jesus thought they needed this. They need this moment of joy before all that is about to happen. They need this moment of joy. They'd been obedient. They had followed him. They hadn't turned away. And so on that very first Palm Sunday, they declared more than they knew. And if I'm honest, as I do every Sunday, when I sing about Jesus as the eternal Son of God, and it's incomprehensible to me, but I believe it nonetheless. and I see it in Jesus nonetheless. And on that first Palm Sunday, they declared the coming of the King. They declared God's salvation plan for the world. And perhaps they should have seen it. If only you'd been with Jesus in those last few weeks of the journey, you'd get it. Remember I told you that Luke is my favourite gospel. Jesus tells these stories that paint this picture of what the kingdom will be like. Here's the story of the man who came in to pray. And he said, God, I'm grateful for all you've given me. I'm so well off and I'm a good bloke. And I just thank you that I'm not a worthless sinner like him. Thank you, Lord. And Jesus said, then there was this other bloke. And he was on his knees. And he wasn't even brave enough to lift his head. And he said, Lord, have mercy on me. Now, if you only had one story, if you only had one story to take from all of the Gospels, you'd take that one, wouldn't you? You'd take that one. That's the picture of Jesus, of his love, of his kingdom, the kingdom of which he is the King. Could you and I have followed him and not proclaimed him King? Could we? Could we not have listened to his words? It wouldn't be possible, would it? It wouldn't be possible not to understand his claim on us each. And one day I'm going to sit down with the disciples and I want them to talk me through it. Talk me through those years that they spent with Jesus. Now, and I won't go after the famous ones like Peter, Paul, and Peter, James and John. Right? Everybody will want to talk to them. I'll say, Thaddeus, come here. We didn't hear about you much. You'll say, well, I was one of the guys who went and got the donkey. Got the donkey. I was obedient. They didn't name me. But that was my moment. That was my moment then. I'd be bragging about it. One of them would say, I was the first to throw my cloak that day. I was the first to throw my cloak. Another might say, I was the one who started shouting. How could we not? You see, they knew enough. They knew they had to follow. They knew that they'd offer him their lives. They discovered that the more they followed him, the more they listened to him, the more they spoke with him, the more their lives were changed. Jesus was their King. Jesus is our King. How could you and I not know that? How can the world not see it? So we rejoice. Jesus is the King who offers us salvation. Jesus is the King who will suffer with us and for us. Jesus is the King who will show us love beyond our imagination. Jesus is the coming King, more than we can imagine, more than we can understand. He is my King. He is your King. So let's offer him our lives right now, today.